You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to the U Talk podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby.
And I'm Joseph Silverzweig. It is very exciting to be here on a Pac-12 Championship Friday. It's the best Red Friday that there's ever been.
I would agree with you. It's also nice to be sitting across the table from you in studio so I can argue with you more in person.
I know it's been so long, and I apologize to our loyal listeners. To our less loyal listeners, I don't apologize, but come listen again. We missed you.
Yeah, those less loyal people. Be more loyal, will
you? Yeah, come on.
Hey, but before we get started, a couple things. I want to give some shout-outs to our Ute businesses who have helped us out as well. Our regards to Mr. Dalai Lama and all his Utah gear and design. He's designed our logo as well as all his Torn by Sports. And also give a shout out to Ute Daddy in the process. Please go sign up and get your yard looking awesome and using less water. But with further ado, we got a lot to talk about.
So we're going to
go quickly
into
the quick hitters. So in case you didn't know, quick hitters, we go over some short news stories or things that we think are worth talking about, maybe not a lot of time. And then we're going to get into the meat of our show. We're going to talk about the results versus the team down south last week and what happened, a couple opinions there. And then we're going to get into the Pac-12 championship and then talk about the four-part series that Oregon Live's been doing about the Pac-12 conference and Larry Scott's leadership. So hang on.
Leadership.
We've got quite the
leadership
show.
Is in air quotes here.
Air quotes. Well, it probably should be. Let me get the schedule up here. I apologize. Okay, so we've got some swimming and diving going on, men's and women's. And then also today, 4 p.m. in Provo, the women's volleyball team's taking on Denver. And that's part of the volleyball national title championship. It's not the national title meet, but nonetheless, it's the beginning of their run to the championship.
Yeah, so the ladies volleyball team is, I think, a little bit on the outside looking in. I'm not quite sure how many teams. I think it's a large tournament.
It is a large tournament.
And they're not ranked. So they're...
Yes, they were, in essence, a bubble team.
Yeah.
You know, to put it in NCAA basketball terms, they got in.
Yeah, they were on the bubble but are in the tournament.
Correct.
And I don't know who's favored against Denver. So
I'm not sure. That would take more research, and I'm not going to do it right now.
But it's a good kind of...
Nonetheless, go support our
Utes. Appetizer, and then go catch the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe wear all your Ute gear, go down to Provo, watch it in person, and like go to a Provo ice creamery or something. Do they have bars in Provo? I don't know. But
and
watch the game. I don't think so.
I mean, I wouldn't be going to bars normally, so I wouldn't know.
I guess I'm the resident expert, such as we have.
You should be.
But I have no idea.
Get your crap together.
I'm sure they have bars.
Nonetheless. There is a football game today, Pac-12 title game, 6 p.m. on Fox. For those of you who have been living under a rock but are listening to our podcast.
If you're listening to our podcast and you don't know that the game is at 6 and it's the Pac-12 championship game, you have got some weird priorities.
There's more swimming and diving beyond that. And then men's basketball is taking on Tulsa. Track and field is going against Weber
I'm really
State.
Glad the Utes have been so successful. Because we haven't had time to talk about basketball, and that's how I like it right now.
We're going to be
basketball's
coming hot.
In just a little bit, we're going to have nothing to talk about but basketball, and it's going to be intense.
So, women's basketball, Utah Valley. And then another thing coming up is the Red Rocks preview. So we're getting into gymnastics, another thoroughbred type of program the Utes have.
And, you know, we love our gymnastics.
And we like talking some gymnastics. We only have the ability to talk.
Yeah. But wasn't it cool? Remember we had Beth Rizzo in here last year?
Cool.
That was so fun, especially because I knew her a little bit from when she was competing.
Well, Joseph, a check-in with you, Mr. Rivals person. Is there any recruiting news that Utah fans should be aware of?
Just a little. The Utes got a commitment from, oh gosh, I can't remember his last name. He goes by Money. It's Monterey. He goes by Money. And he is good, really good, three-star 2020 wide receiver out of Texas. still early days. One of these things was better to have a commitment than not have a commitment, but he's got interest but no offer from Oklahoma and some other really heavy hitters in the region. So one wonders if they won't come calling and put a real strain on this commitment. But it's a great early commitment for the wide receiver. We're still waiting on the biggest commitment, which is looking really good right now. It'd be Quandre Mosley. He's a safety. I think we talked about him last week. Would be an instant replacement for Kryon Ballard. Utes already have their Penn State graduate transfer, instant replacement for one of the linebackers. So they're in really good shape to kind of reload on defense if they can get Quandre Mosley in. And it's looking really good. He's even said it's going to be really hard for another school to change my impression of the Utes. He was there for the rivalry game. So.
Oh wow! We're good. Yeah, shape. Being at the rivalry game, that'll get you.
Yeah,
up
right. It's the yeah, okay. I mean, a game this is like good. That. And the crowd. I mean, I don't know. Are we ready to talk about the rivalry game or do yeah, more?
We're going to say one more thing because okay. It's tradition now. Is
that yeah. We let's fire. Let's fire Witt here. The just like on the tarmac let's on his way in.
Fire Witt. Oh look, we won the Pac-12 championship.
Fire Witt. Oh, we won later the Rose today. Bowl.
Nonetheless, yeah, let's fire with it.
Okay. All right.
So now let's talk about the Holy War a little bit.
Yeah, the fans did a really good job because that was a tough first half. And I know a lot of people turned it off and gave up on the game. And the fans didn't. And that's really cool that they kind of hung in there and they were ready to get amped up when the team needed them to and was ready to, you know, finally show up 20 minutes left in the game. But boy,
how surprising was that start, though, to you?
Really surprising. I was not surprised at the muffed punt and then the quick touchdown. I was like, yes, this is exactly the kind of thing that happens in this game. And then when they didn't kick the extra point, I was like, okay, so the Utes are going to wind up winning by one on that extra point, which thankfully didn't happen. And when I say thankfully, I would feel sincerely bad for that kicker. If you miss an extra point and your team loses by one in the rivalry game, I mean, that would just be a long, long off season.
Yeah.
So that would be brutal. So I was a little bit surprised. I definitely didn't think BYU was going to be able to move on Utah's defense. Bushman's a heck of a player. I mean, I think that he was really hard for the Utes to cover early, although they figured it out eventually. You know what made a big difference, I think, was officiating? The Utes were playing Pac-12 defense. The Pac-12 officials call a lot of penalties.
Yeah.
And so the Utes were playing off the receivers. Once they figured out, oh, wait, I can, like, maul these guys and they're not going to call it, it got a little bit easier, whereas it seemed like BYU knew what kind of officiating they were getting into with a Mountain West and independent crew. That makes sense. So I wonder if that didn't have something to do with the early struggles covering Bushman. It's the only way to cover a tight end like that is to, you know, climb all over him while he's trying to catch a pass.
That's interesting. I hadn't given much thought to impact to the officiating crew except that they didn't screw the game over. So
it was great. It was so nice not to even think about it. I mean, there were a couple calls I felt like they really missed, but they missed them equally on either side.
Yeah.
And it was infrequent enough. And I'd rather officials not call penalties than call crap penalties.
It was consistent.
Yeah.
Right?
It was good.
So that's what you want. But nonetheless, was there ever a point? So we talked about, you know, they get down 20-0 and it comes into the second half. Or was there any point in this game, Joseph, where you're like, I don't know if we're going to be able to do this?
When they scored, and it was the way they scored, too. So Utah got the pick six, and then it was fourth and goal from the one. Mm-hmm. And BYU punched it in.
Yeah.
And there's something about that that's really deflating, right, on the fourth down.
Yeah.
So I looked over at my wife, and I said, okay, now I'm worried. But then they zipped right down, and it wasn't three plays later. I'll tell you, when I decided, no, you know what, the Utes have this, it was actually before they even scored again. It was when there was an 11-yard run for T.J. Green and then about a 12-yard pass for Solomon Enos up the right sideline. And those two plays were back-to-back. And I said, they're rolling. They figured it out. The offense is like, oh, here we go. It's clicking. Everything's working. And indeed, from that point on, they outgained the Cougars by about 5 or 6 yards per play. and just totally dominated the last 20 minutes of the game.
Yeah, no, I mean, when they ran, you know, pick six for them to go right back and score a touchdown, I was definitely concerned. I was concerned before that, but definitely concerned at that point. And then,
well, that was the point where you start to go, is there enough time? Like, yeah, I know which team is totally the best, but there's only 20 minutes left. They are going to have to score on every single possession from here on out, yep, which they did. I mean, they got three and outs or four or five and outs and touchdowns, I mean, every single time for that.
I mean, you told me this before the show, but at what point – I want the highest win percentage.
Right, so this is by the numbers. I asked a lot of people about this on Twitter, and the consensus was 20-0 at the half, 27-7. That's when they were worried. And then a lot of people said, I didn't feel confident they were going to win until it was 21-27. That third touchdown made me go, okay, they're gonna score. They'll stop them once more, because there were still, I think, 8 minutes left in the game at that point.
Yeah.
And it had become close again. Mm-hmm. So this is just ESPN FPI. I don't actively track win probability, but there was a the high point for win probability was not 27-7. It was the half. 20-0 at the half, BYU had a 90.9% chance to win. And then at 27-7, they had about an 88% chance to win after scoring that. Utah's first big chunk was that big – remember that big pass interference penalty that Solomon Enos picked up?
Mm-hmm.
That knocked off about 10% of win probability, because they went from out of the red zone to in the red zone. They were only down 13. 21-27 was still BYU favored, 67%. The Utes didn't wind up favored until
– they took the lead.
Once they got in, when they got the first down on the BYU 5, the CLC Mariner 37-yard pass, where he just manhandled that receiver, and then they got it at the 5, that's when it was like, okay, Utah's going to win this game. Which I think is a little, I don't know, not optimistic enough. I think
that's
funny.
I
think it was fairly
optimistic.
Clear before that Utah, once Utah was playing their best football, and there was clearly enough time left on the clock for them to score one more touchdown, I felt really confident that Utah was going to win, because Utah, their best football is so much better than BYU's best football, and that was really apparent at the end. Once they started playing, it was like, oh, man, there is just a huge, huge gap between these teams.
Yeah, I was much more pessimistic. I wasn't thinking they were going to win the game until they were up by one, and the Utes had already stuffed them on a 4th-and-1, and I didn't think there was any way that BYU offense was going to move the ball and score again. It was just a worry. I guess I was slightly worried still that they could kick a field goal, but nonetheless, the Utah defense did its job and came through. So here's the final question to talk about in the rivalry game, and this will transition us into the Washington game, is does the intensity and emotion and everything associated with the rivalry game, and especially this one with being so far down and having such a dramatic comeback, does it impact the Washington game? And if it does, is it a positive or a negative?
So my default answer to this question is always no. I mean, you guys know I think of these games as very mathematical, right? Just kind of random plays in order, and emotions. It's hard to say whether an emotion is going to help that player get 15 yards or make that player look the wrong way while the other guy goes 15 yards. So I don't really factor it in. I think if it had an effect this time, I mean, historically, I think it's probably had a negative effect. It's usually a physical game. There's usually injuries or at least dings and dents. This time there weren't. And it's usually emotionally draining, right? Because it's close the whole time, and you've got this big knot in your stomach. And I don't know if every fan felt this way or if the players felt this way, but I never felt that way. I was, like, really frustrated and irritated that they were up 20 points, and then they weren't. And it was fun. It was the most fun I've had watching a Holy War, I mean – 10 years since 2008 when they beat them by 24. I had a blast, and watching the players, they looked like they were having a lot of fun too. So I think they're kind of flying high coming in. And it's really up to Washington. If Washington comes out there and kicks them in the teeth, that's going to, you know, change the whole complexion of the game. But that was going to happen anyway. So I think probably minimal, but maybe a slight positive impact because it was such a fun way to win.
Yeah, I mean, so this Washington game, so let's say it has a slight impact, whatever. But it's interesting hearing people talk about the Washington game, and the Utes aren't favored, and it seems like there aren't a lot of people expecting them to win from what I've heard. But this Utah team's a different team, and there's a couple key differences, I think, worth talking about, and so we're going to talk about them.
That's what we call a segue in the business.
Yeah, let me just segue into
we're
going right
to talk about these things
right now. But nonetheless, these are like the three categories I see where there's been changes to the Utah team that are key differences for this Washington game. And the first one is that we have a solidified Max Tupai on the other end spot across
and
the
And I think that
nine.
Is a absolutely huge, potentially totally game-changing deal. If Miles Gaskin rushes 30 times for 90 yards tonight, it's going to be because of Tupai. Because Gaskin is a good back between the tackles, but where he's deadly is when he turns the corner.
Right.
And Utah did not play in that Washington game a defensive end on the opposite side of Anai who was fast enough and athletic enough to keep Gaskin from turning the corner. And you saw it. He had three or four huge runs that totally flipped the field, totally changed the game, and they all come the same way. He runs half backwards and then turns the corner, and he's gone. Tupai is fast. He is fast enough and athletic enough and agile enough to limit what Gaskin can do. So instead of a 35 or a 40-yard run, that's a 6 or an 8-yard run. And that's a huge, huge, huge advantage to have because once you make Washington a traditional between-the-tackles offense, I think that in particular Jake Browning really starts to struggle. I think that he gets shell-shocked and nervous, and he makes some poor decisions. And so I'm looking for Tupai to change the game by containing Gaskin off that edge.
Yeah, no, and if he's containing the edge and Anai's containing the edge, I think this run defense, we know it's amazing, and it's a strength of Washington, that run game with Gaskin.
Gaskin's great. He's one of the best backs in the country.
I'm blanking out on who the other guy is.
Oh, shoot. He's good, though. Is it Ahmad something?
What'd you say?
Ahmad something?
Something along those lines. Yeah. Wow, this is just brutally bad, guys.
We'll figure it out.
But nonetheless, I think the Utes with that new edge over there will be able to set it, and it's strength on strength, right? I mean, which brings you to the other thing.
Salvin Ahmed.
Yeah, okay, Ahmed. Is here we are, and we're talking about run game. We're talking about defensive line. This game is going to be one in the trenches.
Yeah, it's all
any game is one in the trenches. And the reason I say that is because of the quarterbacks. So we've got Jake Browning, who at the beginning of the season was probably a Heisman hopeful, right? But since then, he, for outside of a few games, has thrown an interception in every game and had pretty low quarterback ratings in a lot of these games.
Washington State really handled him very well.
Yeah.
It was just that Washington handled the Leach offense perfectly.
Well, I mean, in the snow. I mean, that game
that,
is,
that didn't
like,
help.
I almost want to throw that game out as a consideration for as far as looking at the Washington defense versus Washington State's offense. But nonetheless, so we have Jake Browning, who's been coughing up the ball. Of the last, like, seven games, he's thrown five interceptions.
And it's particularly when pressured.
When
there's a guy in his face or the line isn't looking strong, he panics.
He threw a pick against Utah and had literally one of – when I'm looking at passing rating, he was literally his third worst game against Utah. So I expect that to be a big impact. On the other side of that, Shelley, who has been a stud, who's really done a great job of protecting the ball, this is the best defense he will have faced. And will he be as composed against Washington as he has been up in this season? Because the great thing I've enjoyed about Shelley is there are specific points where you know you should throw it away, and he does it.
He's great at that.
And he does a great job with that. He's got a really good pass. It's not a rocket, but it's got good touch. I mean, we've seen the long ball success. Mm-hmm. So, but what does this redshirt freshman do against this Washington defense?
Who's going to get to him? Like, that, what does he do when they get to
him?
He's going
to get hit.
Because they will, yeah. You know, and that's not a discredit to Utah's offensive line, which I think is playing better.
Totally.
And that's really, for me, one of the big changes that I want to talk about is we've got a new center. We've got a much more solidified right guard. We've got generally better offensive line play than we did at the beginning of this season. Although, a lot of that's quality of opponent. I mean, Utah hasn't played a defensive line like Washington since they played Washington. And they're going to have a new degree of challenge with Washington's front seven. It's just there's so many unknowns and so much uncertainty. And the only thing I'm confident of is that this game is going to be close and that it's going to be decided by one play. That one guy is going to make one play. And I don't know if that's going to be, a Gaskin run off the corner. I don't know if that's going to be a two-pie strip sack. I don't know if that's going to be a Britton Covey punt return for a touchdown.
I think you just hit it right there.
That's what everybody seems to think. But
look, it's a matter of time.
Yeah.
Like, it hasn't happened this year. And the one that
– Well, hasn't it happened twice, but they've both been called back, or just once?
They've been called back. There's
two,
not
two touchdowns.
I don't know if it was twice. I distinctly remember the Washington State call.
Oh man, that made me mad.
Yeah, we'll continue to make people mad, but we'll talk about officiating when we get to the Oregon Live series. Uh-huh. But nonetheless, the other thing, as much as I agree with you, that one play could be it for this game, and that play is probably going to happen in the fourth quarter. The other thing that's different that is an impact to this game is no Zach Moss. We've got T.J. Green and Ahmed Chaim, and wow, I said his name wrong.
You're getting him confused with Salvon.
But between Green and Chaim, and then Brumfield, who's been getting some carries as well, that we have a three-headed monster, really two-headed with a third.
Yeah,
I don't know whatever you want to say, but you don't have Moss, so how big of an impact are the running backs with the improved offensive line going to have in this game?
Yeah, and I mean, Moss had a good game against Washington. He only had his problem was number of carries, not success. He had 13 carries for 67 yards. It was over 5 per carry. He had a touchdown. Didn't really break out, have a long run. Shine got 7 yards per carry on 2 carries. So Shine was successful against this Washington defense, although only on 2 carries. My question is, are we starting the right running back?
Really?
Yeah. I like Shine. I've kind of kept this under my hat. I was all set to say it, and then he had that stellar 5-yard touchdown run where he just didn't go down, and he made a bunch of BYU players look like wimps.
Yes,
that was really great.
That was amazing.
But Green is a more dynamic, more explosive running back, and Shine's lack of patience continues to be a problem. So Shine's what you call a one-cut runner. He's got his hole that he's supposed to hit between the tackle and the guard or wherever it is, and he'll hit it. He's good at doing what he's supposed to do, but he doesn't wait for it to be open. There's one play, if you go follow Hans Olsen, he does this breakdown of a play where he talks about how a defensive tackle got a nice pushback and it kept the pulling guard from getting to his spot fast enough. But what Zach Moss would have done in that situation is he would have taken a step back and he would have made room for the guard to kind of pull around the weakness in the line and then hit the hole. Shine doesn't do that. He just puts his head down and goes where he needs to go, which works when the offensive line is playing really well. Doesn't work as well when you're playing a really good front seven or the offensive line isn't playing that well. So I wonder if the offense wouldn't be better served with Green getting more carries, which doesn't mean Shine rides the bench. He's a good running back. I think part of what's going to make this rotation work is freshness, making sure that you have different backs in there at different times so their legs are fresher, and get that advantage to kind of offset the talent gap between Moss and these two guys. And I don't really know the answer. It's just been bouncing around in my head, and I was thinking it the whole time I was watching the BYU game. Shine kept struggling. I was like, try Green. And then Green just pops off for 10, 11 yards. I said, this is what I expect to see from running back in this game. So I don't know. I don't know the answer, but that's what I wonder.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know the answer beyond the fact that I have enjoyed watching TJ Green run the ball because it gives me hope for our backfield. Yeah. Next year, because there's what's no funny way Zach Moss is coming back.
No way. He's gone. He's already. I mean, if he doesn't have an agent already, he should. And you know, God bless him. But what's funny is TJ Green.
Are you going to be okay with that?
Huh?
Will there be Joseph tears for not being? Able
oh
to
no!
Zach
I'll be
Moss's
so okay.
Biceps?
He's going to look so good, and you know, I don't know, Ravens purple or something. I don't know who's going to draft him. No, I'll be all right. I can.
You'll still Google his picture.
Yeah, right. We'll be good. see, now you've run over my train of thought here. Green was in the spring and fall thought to maybe be a bust. There were a lot of coaches saying he's just not physical enough. He's not running to contact. He's not blocking physically enough. He's not doing the things that we expect him to do. But as soon as you flip the lights on, he hits another gear, and I think he's a really, really good back. And yeah, Utah's got a nice bright always does, but has a nice bright future at running back with TJ Green.
So I really want to talk about the Pac-12 series with Oregon Life, but we got to make predictions for today's game because it is happening today.
Yeah, I mean,
within hours.
Yeah, in 4.5 hours. So,
what do you got, Joseph?
I am picking the Utes. My model likes the Utes, which is insane. I think the point I want to make is you have almost everybody picking Washington, and there are good reasons for that, but they're picking Washington by a really small margin. So if everybody's wrong about the same things, Utah should be favored in this game. And I think everybody's wrong about the same things. And I think what they're wrong about is that Utah's offense doesn't work against Washington, because I don't think national people are aware of the strides schematically and execution-wise that the offense has made in the last 10 weeks. And I have enormous faith in Troy Taylor's ability to put up not a lot of points, but enough points. And I don't
enough
think
to win.
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to see a big difference between what Washington did in Salt Lake City and what they're going to do at Levi Stadium, except that there's a chance that Tupai is just going to shut down Gaskin off the edge, and he's going to average less than 4 yards a carry, and then Utah should walk away with it. But I'm going to say that that probably doesn't happen. Gaskin gets his, but Utah scores enough. And I'm going to pick the Utes 23-21 over the Washington Huskies.
Ooh.
Pac-12 champs.
So, yeah, I've been going back and forth on this. I mean, it's going to be a close game. I think, like you've illustrated with your pick, we got a low-scoring game. It's going to be close. Probably a field goal wins it. And for that reason, I'm going to go 24-21 and say Mr. Gay, who wasn't even a finalist for the Grosso Award? I can't remember.
Whichever one wasn't even
listed as a finalist, is going to hit the game-winning field goal in the Pac-12 title game to take us to the Rose Bowl. Just be a fitting way to end the senior season before the bowl game.
Okay.
So
clean sweep here from the Homer podcast.
I'm not going to lie. I'm wearing Utah gear right now.
Me too. I'm in red. Like, what are we going to do? We're gonna pick the Utes to lose? Come on. But for what it's worth, my model, my unbiased numbers have the Utes winning by 1.5.
Wow. All right.
So,
1.5.
So we're not up in the night here to be predicting a close game.
Oh, yeah. No, this is going to be a close one. Well, unless the Pac-12 refs call phantom targeting calls and other miscellaneous personal fouls and penalties against the Utes, which they did the first time around. So this might happen, which brings me to the four-part series that Oregon Live's been doing. I forget the writer who's done it.
But it's been beautiful. I mean, he did a remarkable job. He pulled together this incredible amount of information, put it out there in a four-part series that, I mean, just absolutely guts Larry Scott and the Pac-12. I mean, it is hitting point by point every single problem that people have with them, that fans have with them, and your problems with them are totally legitimate. And then he's pulling in stories and facts and sources that are adding color to these ideas and in just the most damaging fashion you could imagine. I don't know. I mean, I guess the presidents like this guy, but I don't know how you can't, after this, with everything else that's going on,
make some changes. Yeah, there's got to be some change.
And like for Woody Dixon to still be this is one of the revelations here. Woody Dixon, he's not allowed to call in anymore, but he's still in the room with all the refs.
He's right next door.
Yeah, there's a central building where they pipe in all the games, and there's the special review refs that decide on these targeting calls, and he's still right there. So if he's manipulating results again, it'd be really hard to know.
Yeah, the one revelating thing that will change maybe the way I criticize refs is that supposedly they have more angles that even TV doesn't have. So that was interesting to know. But besides that, like the way they are manipulating officials, like, look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist normally, but when you've got this kind of evidence that it has happened and you can't positively confirm it hasn't happened in the past, clearly there's truth to the conspiracy that the Pac-12 has been protecting their bellwethers, that the teams that are their big programs, they've been protecting them, and this shows it. I mean, and the just straight-up incompetence with the TV network and DirecTV. I mean, they're off AT&T UVerse, I think it's called.
Yeah, it's a streaming service. It was one of the only ways for a lot of fans to watch Pac-12 football. Now they can't.
Yeah.
And it just keeps getting worse. And it's funny for me because I have always had. I mean, I'm not really a huge NFL fan. I don't watch the NBA at all. So all I care about is Pac-12 football. So I would never dream of getting a package that didn't include it. I wouldn't move somewhere where I couldn't. Like, it's really important to me. But I understand that a lot of fans want NFL Sunday Ticket and other stuff that come with DirecTV. And DirecTV knows it. And they're not experiencing any trouble with their subscription. And I think asking fans to, you know, negotiate for you is ridiculous. You ought to be able to negotiate your own resolution to these conflicts. And it's just embarrassing, and the story just made it more embarrassing because it laid bare how dysfunctional the negotiation process was, how many mistakes they made, how much. I mean, you can't negotiate unless you know the value your product has, and they just didn't know. They just went in there thinking something that was wrong, and they weren't able to adjust on the fly. And the Pac-12 is paying a huge price, and that's dollars and cents price. And then the other kind of, this is ticky-tack stuff, I guess, but the fiscal stuff where they're spending $7 million a year on their fancy San Francisco office, and Larry Scott's flying everywhere first class. I talked to a fan on Twitter today who bumped into the president of the university, the new president, Ruth. Is it?
Yeah, I can't remember. Ruth. I can't remember.
Ruth, I can't remember her last name. Bumped into her, flying coach. She walked to get her rental car at the, you know, Hertz or whatever. And that's how executives should be, because they
Ruth
should be
Watkins, by the way. Yeah.
Because they should be demonstrating, you know, a commitment to
Fiscal responsibility.
Fiscal responsibility to putting the brand ahead of your sort of personal satisfaction.
And, well, and recognizing it's a state school. This is tax dollars.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's ridiculous. And it's not the only ridiculous thing. There's tons and tons of them. And I don't know if I'm going to hop on the conspiracy theory bandwagon. I don't think that there's quite enough evidence to say.
There's enough evidence that it's hard to deny, though.
There is enough evidence that every single fan is justified in having no faith in the integrity or impartiality of the officiating process. And it's like being a judge in a court case.
Right.
The appearance of impartiality is important because you need the people to walk away from that thinking, I may not like what just happened, but it was fair.
Right.
And you can't think that anymore. And they have made it impossible to think that. And every single time a penalty is called, every single time something happens, and you see it, get on Twitter and you'll see, oh, Woody Dixon is at it again.
Yeah.
That's a huge, huge problem. And it was a national story and you see it all over the country. That's a disaster. And a dozen heads should have rolled. You know, it should have been Larry Scott first and Woody Dixon second. But it didn't happen, hasn't happened yet. And it's the problem is that it is up to the university presidents to make it happen. I think if the athletic directors were the ones who were deciding, it would already have been done.
Yeah, and I
but
can't.
But the presidents, I think the Pac-12, because it's less football focused, if they're cashing a check every year, they're pretty happy. They're not really necessarily thinking about whether they're making enough money or, you know, if they could be making more or what the situation is or trajectories or brand identity, those kinds of things. I think they're thinking, you know, how am I going to fund this next research grant? How am I going to, you know, these other things that are more important to schools like Cal and Stanford and the University of Utah. So I get where they're coming from, but we're well past the point where something has to change. And it shouldn't be that hard to fire this guy. I mean, he's making millions of dollars a year, which is way more than these other guys are making in other conferences.
Right.
I joked on Twitter, it's like, I'll run your Pac-12 for 86 grand a year. And it's not hard to find people who will do it for not much money because it's a really cool job. And people will take, a reasonable executive salary for those kinds of things.
Here's what I don't understand is – I'm sure at the conception of the Pac-10 or whatever it was way back when.
Hold on 1 second. I need to paint a picture here because Grant has picked up his microphone and he's kind of lounging back in his chair, holding it close to his mouth here, and he's just getting ready to like expound his wisdom. And it's quite the sight to see. And I wish
illustrated that for our listeners. But nonetheless, I don't understand why in the world the Pac-10, Pac-12, or whatever conference was set up where the presidents are the end-all, be-all, and the ADs don't have a voice in this. Like, the whole reason the conference exists is for sports. How in the world do the ADs not have the power? Like, they're the ones in the – like, they're there. They're the ones who knows what's going on in their program. They know the funding they're getting. They know the dollars, and they matter to them. Yet here's Larry Scott and the presidents, like, and it details this in the article. It details it. I mean, plenty of people have brought it up that in their budgets, the presidents, like, who cares about this little sports thing? Yeah, it's making millions of dollars, but I got a $3 billion budget I have to deal with.
Right, and so that's what I'm saying is it's just not a big deal to them.
Right, and I don't blame them on that front. But why in the world the ADs don't get things like
– it's not that you wish the presidents were more involved.
Right.
It's that you wish that it was structured differently so that – it was the athletic directors with skin in the game who would be making these decisions. And in this last article where they're talking about the relationship between the athletic directors and Larry Scott, where the only reason they don't say things bad about him is because he's vindictive and
untouchable.
Will do and say things to betray and undercut you down the road and will make life miserable for you. I mean, that's a terrible, terrible reason not to want to talk bad about somebody, right? And then there's the story about Athletic Director Hill when he was still the athletic director, where he's asking questions about how they're building the brand and things like that. And Larry Scott shuts him down and says, you're lucky to get what you have.
Which is ridiculous.
Which is a ridiculous thing to say. I mean, absolutely beyond the pale absurd. And Chris Hill should be, like we're saying here, should be Larry Scott's boss.
Exactly.
And should be able to say, no, you're lucky to have what you have, buddy. You better shape up or get out. And it doesn't seem like there's anybody with both an interest and the ability to rein this guy in. And he's – I mean – people are talking in grandiose terms about the future of the conference, and I think it's overblown.
The whole focus on 2024 and having all of our TV and digital rights available. Like, hey, great. I'm glad we made that decision that we're going to have all of our rights available for 2024. What's not great is that I'm going into a bowl season, and the only team I really expect to win their bowl is the Utes because Kyle Whittingham wins bowl games, and no one else in the Pac-12 won their bowl game last year. So we're going to be up against it year after year until supposedly we have all of our rights and can get the same amount of money as everyone else in 2024. I don't want to wait that long. The athletic directors sure as hell don't want to wait that long. I just don't get – Here's my main problem with it. I know that's the pitch. Yeah, 2024, blah, 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 blah. But what can we do? What can be done to effect change? Because the CEO group, with air quotes, which is the presidents and chancellors of the schools, what is going to take to get them to take action? Because we know the ADs have no teeth. The coaches have no teeth. The fans have no teeth. So who's got teeth in the game to be able to do something?
There is nobody who is satisfied with Larry Scott. The media can't stand him. Apparently the athletic directors, you don't have to, you know, go far to see what Mike Leach thinks of him, and my guess would be that the other coaches think the same.
Things are just a little bit less plain spoken.
And the fans, everybody loathes this guy. And so for him to still have a job anyway is a real – for the presidents not to notice at this point. Not to like – I mean, because I get it takes a lot to kind of get this on their radar. But it should be on your radar now. Totally. You should be looking here and going, wait, we're paying how much? How much is everybody else paying? Wait, he's doing this with the officials? That doesn't sound good. Wait, so he's yelling at my athletic director and calling him names? I mean, all of this stuff should add up to – it's not hard to find people who will do this. I mean, it's a cool job, and there are a lot of talented people in athletics administration and media, and you can – you can find somebody who will do a better job, or at least not be a dick about it. Pardon my French. I mean, he's just a jackass, and it would be nice to have somebody I liked running the conference if they're going to run it into the ground.
Yeah, I mean, as a parting shot here, at UTDaddy on Twitter came up with a hashtag. I can't remember what it is, but he was making up stories about the video. Supposedly, he did a video presentation. It's going to be a big announcement, and everyone in the Pac-12 conference offices thought it was going to be DirecTV related, and it instead was, hey, I got an extension. You should go find the feed. You started making up stories of what the next video could be. It was fantastic. But nonetheless, look, if there's a hashtag about firing someone that should legitimately stick and not be a joke like our hashtag fire wit one, it should be the hashtag fire Larry Scott.
Just get him gone.
Yeah. So, absolutely. Nonetheless, the good news, Utah fans, is we're picking the Utes to win. They have a game at 6 p.m. today.
And none of that stuff matters between the lines, right? The Utes win.
Yep.
They go to the Rose Bowl. And it doesn't matter if one person watch or a billion people watch this game. If the Utes win, they go to the Rose Bowl. They are Pac-12 champions. And that is a permanent and indelible achievement that will be the greatest achievement of this football program to date.
Wow. Okay. We'll save that talk after.
Yeah,
they win.
I think. Yeah, when they win, that'll be a great talk
about greatest achieve. Yeah,
right. Because people are like, well, the Sugar Bowl, but trust me on this.
It's Sugar Bowl.
It's not even the Rose Bowl. The Pac-12 title is the greatest achievement of this football program.
I actually think it was the 2008 national championship, but
the carrot. Okay.
So nonetheless, I hope everyone is safe because there's some pretty hazardous weather coming. And enjoys the game tonight, and that we come back next week celebrating a win. Until next time, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter at Ute Talk Podcast or email at utetalk@gmail.com.